The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn Beck.
Pat Gray and Stu Bergier for Glenn. Big day because Donald Trump yesterday interviewed some of the potential nominees for the U.S. Supreme Court. And Stu, you actually have a breakdown of some of these guys?
Yeah, well, I mean...
Because, I mean, I'm not all that familiar with their judicial records. It's not like I follow their court actions closely during the regular court season.
What an admission.
I know, that sounds really ignorant,
well,
doesn't it?
But it's one of those things. I had a couple of years ago where I became obsessed with Philadelphia Eagles draft picks. Mm-hmm. And I kept just like scouting all of them, and everyone that would be mentioned as a potential draft pick, I would go through and learn their history and watch their, you know, highlight films from college. And then the draft came and they didn't pick any of them. I was like, that was a complete waste of time. Why did I do that?
Yeah. I used to be the same way with the court. With the court system.
That's why
every judge, I would watch his rulings. I would jot them down. I would keep their stats, but I haven't done it in about 3 or 4 years, so I'm a little lost on where they are currently.
He interviewed five. Brett Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett.
Okay.
Amul Thapar? I just did the stupid
Amul Thapar.
Thank you. Amul Thapar. Mm-hmm. There's a rhythm to that one. Mm-hmm. Amul Thapar. What say it again?
Amul Thapar.
Yeah. I mean, you follow these guys.
Yeah, right. It's been a while, but yes.
And Raymond Kethledge are the
now,
four.
Now, I understand. I keep hearing that Kavanaugh is the least desirable of all of these guys.
Yeah, well, I'm nervous about it. So if you think about this list, it's gone through three iterations. It was first, I think, 10, then it went up to 21, and then it went to 25. So it's grown over time.
Mm-hmm.
And Kavanaugh was put in this last group of five. Now, if you go back to the way that they picked Gorsuch, they added 10 to the list. And Gorsuch was in there. Reportedly, they basically added the 10 names so they could add Gorsuch and they wouldn't draw attention to the, we added one more name we came up with. You know, it would be kind of obvious. So they added kind of a slew of solid choices, and they were targeting Gorsuch at that time as one of the favorites. So Kavanaugh and Barrett were both added in this last group. Kavanaugh is the one we're kind of worried about here.
Was he the one that was the runner-up to Gorsuch last time?
No, that's Thomas Hardiman. And Hardiman is also on the short list here. So those are the two that I'm worried about right now. Hardiman and Kavanaugh. Now, both of them check all the boxes. It's not like he's picking some guy off the streets. They've gone through the Federalist Society's screening. So this is...
Okay.
I don't think you're talking at all to just put this off the table, you know, between a suitor... where you make a mistake and it becomes one of the most liberal justices there. I don't think you're talking... The scale we're discussing here is not Ginsburg to Clarence Thomas. The scale we're talking is Kennedy to Clarence Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's no reason to get another Kennedy here. There's no reason to get another Roberts. Sandra Day O'Connor is another great example. Mm-hmm. You don't need that here.
Right.
You don't need it. You don't need to please the left with this pick.
Not at all.
At all.
You shouldn't even consider it.
There should be zero risk.
Yep.
So the issue here is not whether Kavanaugh is—he's not terrible. He's not Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He's not Souter. But I'm worried he is, you know, Roberts.
Do we have any idea where he stands on Roe v. Wade?
We don't know, per se. We do know where he stands on Obamacare and the individual mandate, which is really, I think, the thing that's throwing up red flags for everybody. He wrote a decision, or an opinion, on Obamacare as it was making its way up the court system to get to the Supreme Court. So this is before Roberts rules on it. And he, in his opinion, basically outlines a path to approve of Obamacare, approve of the individual mandate. Now, his justification for that was largely judicial restraint. I think the legislature should make these decisions and not us. The problem with that is, you know, when it's unconstitutional, you don't need restraint. Mm-hmm. To stick with the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
I want someone who has very little restraint to honor the Constitution.
Right.
You don't need restraint in that area. You need someone who is going to not try to make new laws, like, for example, Roberts did to justify Obamacare. He rewrote the law. As Scalia says, it's now SCOTUS care because we basically just rewrote it. And that is what the what was making a lot of people nervous here with Kavanaugh. He is a guy who this decision, we can go through this more in depth. I don't know how boring we want to get today, but the bottom line is,
well, we want to be really boring.
Really boring?
Yeah.
Oh, just wanna... well, let's read the whole decision then. Hold on. if you go through the breakdown of it, you know, that is largely his reasoning, is judicial restraint, which is something that was a priority of George W. Bush when picking justices. So, again, that got you Roberts. And the issue with Roberts is he doesn't want to make these big rulings come from the court because he doesn't want to be the one. He wants to keep the court's reputation intact.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't look, the court's reputation is not your job. Your
right.
job is
Constitution.
The Constitution. Okay. Look at, can you force people to buy things they don't want?
No.
It's not available as a government power and has never been utilized as a government power until we all of a sudden made it one. When Roberts made that decision. And that's the sort of thing I don't want. To me, that's activism.
Mm-hmm.
When you create a brand new thing that has literally never been utilized before, forcing people to buy insurance to be in good standing as a citizen, and you rework the law to make it okay, twice, by the way, Roberts did this twice in two separate cases, the subsidies and the fee tax situation. That's not what I want. And there's no reason to get another Roberts here. Because people keep saying, well, Jeffrey Toobin's on TV every day saying, oh, well, in 18 months, we're going to have absolutely no Roe versus Wade. Women are going to have no rights. Gays are not going to be able to go into any bakeries. They will not be able to purchase baked goods at any time. Like, there's no reason to believe that. We don't know how Roberts is going to rule on Roe versus Wade. There's no way you can have confidence in that. By the way, we don't even know how Alito...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have confidence in Alito. I have confidence in Gorsuch on this issue, but we don't know how either one. The only vote you know you have is Clarence Thomas at this point. That's it.
Yeah.
So the fact that you're going to go 4-for-4 with Roberts, Gorsuch, and Alito, which I'm pretty confident in, and then add on to that whoever this new justice is, this is a, if it's over 50%, I'll be surprised right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would buy at 1-to-1. The odds of Roe versus Wade being overturned. I mean, I would need 3-4-1 before I would start.
I'm nowhere near as confident as Jeffrey Toobin. I wish I were.
And he's just fear-mongering, though, right? I mean, I don't
I
think
guess,
he believes
yeah,
it.
I don't know.
I think he's just trying to scare everyone.
I want
like,
to believe
to oppose it. I want to believe it, too. I want it to happen more
it
than anything.
It should happen. Yeah. It should happen.
Absolutely. And, you know, and we can go into that as well, because it's really, even a Roe versus Wade overturn is not as big a deal. It's a big deal, but it's not... the end all be all. It doesn't end abortion, certainly in the world, but not even in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot there. But so that's one. Kavanaugh, I'm nervous about Kavanaugh. I'm also nervous about Hardiman. Hardiman finished in second last time. He was added as a favor to the list, reportedly from Rick Santorum. Now, Rick Santorum's
conservative.
Stop doing
favors for people.
Rick Santorum's pretty conservative. Although, you know, he's a guy, you know, he's a different flavor of conservative.
Mm-hmm.
As we've seen with his minimum wage policies and, you know, certain, you know, he sees himself as sort of a blue collar, you know, populist conservative, which is not my particular flavor. He doesn't like, you know, he's been outspoken against libertarians in the past. And on the court is where you really want libertarians, right? Like the court
yep.
is the place for libertarians.
Yep.
Even if you don't want them as your president or you don't want them as your senator, you want them in the court because they're going to look at the Constitution as written. And that may not be Hardiman. Hardiman is, they try to do these things. They're imperfect, I think. But when it comes to whether they're liberal or conservative, they have these ratings. And so the court, as it stands right now, Sotomayor and Ginsburg, way on the left. Breyer and Kagan, liberal, but not quite as liberal. Then Kennedy, who they have rated on the scale as to the left of center. Okay? So understand that like that's, people are like, oh, they're replacing a conservative with another conservative. I mean, moderate is really a fair description probably of Kennedy, but he's not really all that conservative. He was good on certain things. Then Roberts, then Alito, then Gorsuch, and then all the way to the right, Clarence Thomas. What you want is another Clarence Thomas. Of the 10 justices or potential justices that they rated, the closest to Clarence Thomas is Mike Lee, most conservative out of that entire group. The most liberal of the group that they rated was Thomas Hardiman. Hardiman in between Kennedy and Roberts is where they have him rated ideologically.
Mm.
And again, there's just no reason to risk mm-hmm. something like that. Hardman might be okay, but there's no reason to risk him. Again, you know, you have Hardman was added as a favor. Now, Santorum is a good guy and a conservative guy.
He's not even in office.
But he's not even in office. But he wanted, this was when Trump was looking for his endorsement during the campaign. And this is when he was added to the list. But okay, just because it's a favor or someone else, that's not necessarily bad. It could be good. But that's also how we got Souter. Mm-hmm. John Sununu, hey, I know this guy in New Hampshire. He's fantastic. You're going to love him. And then we got the most liberal guy in the Supreme Court almost. So that makes me nervous. He's also friends with Trump's sister, serves with Trump's sister on the court, which, again, you could argue fairly, hey, he's got insight on who this person is. You know, extra insight. Maybe that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Makes me nervous when you have personal relationships having anything to do with stuff like this, because that's how you make mistakes.
We've been burned many times before.
Yeah, really have. And he also, you know, is on this list the furthest to the left. So, I mean, to me, I don't want Hardman. The problem was he was reportedly in second place to Gorsuch when they picked last time. He interviewed, they said, even better than Gorsuch. It was a great interview, very well prepared. And he is on the short list again here. He's listed in the story today in the top five. He has already been interviewed by Trump. And Trump went through four others. So that's two of the top five, the two that I'm nervous about. The other three are Amy Coney Barrett, who you'll remember her from when she was going through her last advise and consent process. She was attacked for her religion by was Dianne Feinstein, mm-hmm. who was basically like, oh yeah, what was the word she used? The dogma.
Yeah.
The dogma is strong with you.
Lives loudly within you.
Yeah. Like, wait, what?
What?
And she is a member of like a church group, and they're trying to make that look like it's a cult.
Well, she's Catholic.
Yeah.
And then there's some group that she's in that's a Catholic group.
It's a Catholic group. And it's like a Catholic group of people who like pledge to each other to help each other throughout their lives.
That's kookery. That's crazy. What a nut job. You can't have her on the court.
But she, I mean, again, seemingly would be on the right side of Roe versus Wade with that background. So that is something that is positive, possibly a positive. Mm-hmm. Thapar, or what is it? Amul Thapar. There we go. Amul Thapar. This is another one recommended highly, is the pick of Mitch McConnell. This is who Mitch McConnell wants to get this gig. And he's been on the list. He's pretty conservative. He's on the ideological rating scale is slightly to the right of Alito.
Wow.
So that's seemingly a good pick.
Yeah.
Again, I get a little nervous when you have people recommending others.
Yeah.
It always makes me nervous, but I understand it. And then Kethledge, who is equal to Gorsuch on this ideological list, which is pretty nice. So there's look, all of these justices are right of center.
Mm-hmm.
Why we would go more towards the center than the right?
No reason
there's
to.
There's no reason to here. You know what? We talked about this on the news and why it matters, which we are both on every day here in the Blaze. If you go in there and you put in Mike Lee, let's just say, they're not going to do this, I don't think, but let's say you put in Mike Lee, and Mike Lee goes through there and he's been outspoken against Roe versus Wade, thinks it's a terrible decision, blah, blah, blah. And Murkowski and Collins come out and say, no, I'm not going to vote for them. First of all, you're going to have a great case to go to red state Democrats in that election and say, hey, West Virginia, we needed the vote from Manchin and he wouldn't do it. You're going to have a great case to win all of those Senate seats that are in red states.
Yep.
I think you roll the dice with it.
I do too.
Because there's a good chance Republicans expand their majority here in the Senate. Mm-hmm. That it's set up perfectly for them to do so. If you have an outstanding Supreme Court seat, it's going to drive people to the polls like crazy. And I think you roll the dice with it, and then you put in the most conservative person you absolutely can. Now, you don't necessarily have to have them outspoken, like Lee has been, or maybe Pryor has been on Roe versus Wade, but you need to have someone who you're sure of. No playing here.
Mm-hmm.
No. Oh well, let's pick someone who's never said anything about an issue.
Let's not anger the liberals.
Yeah, you don't need to do that here. Even if you lose Murkowski and Collins, it's just an argument to come back. You'll probably get to 54 or 55 seats in the Senate, and then you'll be able to get whoever you want through. And if they go along with it, if you have another Gorsuch ready to go and you think they're that good, then do it. And it's great. But if you don't get it through, you could be patient with this one, I think. I'd rather not pull the trigger on somebody like Hardiman, who is really risky. And then at the end of the day, you're like, oh, well, if we waited 3 months, you know, we could have had somebody better.
You know, this is maybe the main issue for an awful lot of people in voting for Donald Trump. Those who weren't mm-hmm. absolutely sold on him from the beginning usually came to the conclusion, well, the Supreme Court. He'll be good with he's a lot better on the Supreme Court, and we've got some openings that are likely, and I'm not gonna put Hillary Clinton there. I'm gonna vote for Trump because of the Supreme Court. How many people did that?
Lots.
Many. So now here's the chance.
Yeah.
And here's your opportunity.
Well, seemed to do well with pick one. You know, you never know this for, I mean, Roberts looked great in the first year or two as well, so you never know, but it looks great. If he can pull out another one like that, it's gonna be fantastic.
That'd be great. 888-727 Beck. It's Pat and Stu for Glenn, 888-727 Beck. Looks like we avoided a 4th of July attack on downtown Cleveland, which is always a good thing. FBI said Demetrius Nathaniel Pitts, also known as Abdur Rahim Rafiq, is taken into custody on Sunday around 10 on accusations of attempting to provide material support to foreign terrorist organizations. Apparently, he was trying to figure out how to give toys with explosives in them to children of military veterans.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And they had all kinds of things planned for downtown Cleveland. And fortunately, we dodged a bullet there. Frightening.
Wow.
Yeah, targets like St. John's Cathedral and giving remote control cars packed with explosives and shrapnel to the children of military members.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? Actually, I mean, we saw this in the documentary Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, in which that company, which of course I can't remember the name of the company.
Right.
Silver Shamrock, I think it was. And they they gave Halloween masks to kids all around America.
Right.
And they
had to put them on while you watched.
Right. And then you gather around the TV mm-hmm. and they had this, you know, the 3 more days to Halloween.
Don't sing that otherwise.
I won't sing the full song because then if you're wearing the mask, it will. Apparently, I don't know what it does exactly inside, but I know bugs crawl out your eyes.
And yeah, it's worse than hypnosis.
Well, it crushes your skull, and then bugs crawl out your eyes. I don't know exactly where the bugs stored in the mask. Where did they come from? But the bugs,
I don't know.
And snakes. Why were there snakes? Were there snakes in the rubber of the mask? I don't know.
It never seemed
to
be fully explained.
No, but I mean,
just know it was horrible.
But I mean, that was legitimately. Like the plot, you give kids something mm-hmm. that they like, they hold on to it, they put it on their heads, and then it kills them.
Yes.
That is, the fact that that's a potentially real life scenario, slightly altered from Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Yes.
I'm glad they caught this guy. Jeez, that is.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine?
And when you get into that stuff, I mean, look, killing people for any reason. There's just a guy who was arrested for threatening to kill Ajit Pai, the FCC commissioner, over net neutrality. Now, look, there's a lot of reasons to kill somebody.
But net neutrality.
Your Netflix buffering is not one of them. It's like, the amazing world we live in today.
I know.
It's incredible. And here, like, there's a certain extra level deep in the bowels of hell for someone who would try to give a kid an exploding toy.
No doubt about it.
Wow. Wow.
Really dodged a bullet there. It's Pat and Stu for Glenn, 888-727-BECK. We were talking about potential Supreme Court nominees. What is this group that Amy... The two names that we're hearing most right now are Judge Kavanaugh and Judge Barrett. Amy Coney Barrett.
They're both added in that last group, which makes sense, the way they picked last time.
Has he talked to both of them? I think he has, right? He's interviewed both of them already.
Yes. And also, CBS is reporting that those are the final two.
Now, she belongs to some scary, scary religious group.
Yes, it's Catholic. Have you heard of this?
Catholic?
Mispronouncing that?
Catholic?
Catholic.
I think it's Catholic.
Okay,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm not familiar. It sounds really bad, though. No.
Well, there's only like 2 billion of them around the world.
That's it?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
that's weird.
It's this tiny little fringe group.
A cult.
So,
she is a faithful Catholic. And she had an issue with Dianne Feinstein, where, you know, Dianne is not apparently a fan of being a faithful Catholic, I guess. I don't know exactly what she's describing in this clip, but it's become sort of a famous one, because if you're a faithful person, you know, if you're going to be attacked like this, if this is an attack, then you're eliminating everybody of faith, basically.
Yes.
Everybody who actually lives their faith. And I don't think that's what I don't think that's what we're supposed to be doing here.
A litmus test to make sure you're not religious.
Right? This legitimately seems to be what is being applied here. This is Dianne Feinstein with Amy Coney Barrett.
When you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you. And that's of concern when you come to big issues that large numbers of people have fought for years in this country.
What? So that's a concern, that you believe things strongly in your religion. What are you talking about? Is this the United States of America?
I don't know.
We take a wrong turn and wind up in a Soviet bloc nation? What do you mean that's a concern? Why? What do you mean you're concerned about that? And of course, what she means is, we fought so hard for Roe v. Wade that we will not give it up come what may.
Yes, absolutely.
We are going to continue the slaughter of children. And if you want to stop that, I'm sorry, you can't be a part of any judicial system.
It is under, we believe, and we are under the impression that some Catholics do not like Roe versus Wade, and they do not like abortion, and therefore we do not want you on the court. That's essentially what she's saying.
It's exactly what she's saying. Mm-hmm. And she can't obviously state it that clearly, but that's exactly what she means.
Now, she is also, it goes further than this, Pat. She is... she is in a very deep cult, as described by a lot of people on Twitter. But it does not seem like necessarily a cult to me. I would like to get your opinion on this.
This is the People of Praise group, right?
Yes. She is a member of a small, tightly knit Christian group called People of Praise. I don't know why. It just seems like you should say it in a scary way. The members of the group swear a lifelong oath of loyalty called a covenant to one another. Now, I don't know what that... I mean, obviously, like, if you take this to, you know, the Rajneeshis in, you know, Oregon, you could find a way that a lifelong cult or a lifelong pledge of loyalty or a covenant could be really scary, right? Like, and that's obviously how this is intended to read, you know? But I mean, when you listen to it, I mean, it's like...
Well, what is it a covenant to do?
Exactly. So, let me... Current and former members say that the heads and handmaids, that's what they're called. So, they have... The covenant is to one another. They're assigned and accountable to a personal advisor called a head for men and a handmaid for women. The group teaches that husbands are the heads of their wives and should take authority over the family. Now, this is how the New York Times also characterizes the Bible, right? So, I don't know... if you're a religious person, why you'd be scared of this? Because this is how they talk about these issues all the time. Mm-hmm. And they just make it seem like it's the worst thing that's ever been invented.
Right.
And when you talk, you know, maybe this is a terrible group and it's the boy who cried wolf, because anything that is religious, they make sound like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't really know by looking at this. It says current and former members say that the heads and handmaids give direction on important decisions, including whom to date, whom to marry, where to live, whether to take a job or buy a home, and how to raise children. Now, that to me strikes to me as the way the New York Times would write about a support group, a group of people who have similar principles and who realize that men and women are fallible and at times go off the road, and you need someone to help bring you back to the correct road. Right. I know that's in your church. Right. You have people you have a system, not exactly like that, but it's pretty similar from my understanding of it. Right. Where like, Glenn has talked about how he's had people who are in troubled times that come over to the house, and he'll go visit them to try to help them through troubled times.
Yes.
Right. Like, that seems like a really rational thing for a church to be doing.
Yeah.
Legal scholars say that such loyalty oaths could raise legitimate questions about judicial nominees' independence and impartiality. So the idea here is that Amy Coney Barrett is going to be like, I don't know what to do on Roe versus Wade. Let me go ask my handmaid. And then the handmaid's going to be like, oh, you absolutely want that. Like, is that really the implication here?
I guess. That's absolutely not going to be the case. That's not going to happen. This is ludicrous.
These groups can be so absorbing that it's difficult for a person to retain individual judgment, says Sarah Barringer Gordon, a professor of constitutional law and history at the University of Pennsylvania.
And an expert on the people of praise?
Absolutely.
Okay, sure. Now, let's hear what she says then. Does she go in depth into the group?
No, she says, I don't think it's discriminatory or hostile to religion to want to learn more about a relationship with the group. Okay.
All right.
Ms. Barrett, through a spokesperson at the Notre Dame Law School, where she is on faculty, declined several requests to be interviewed for this article. A leader of People of Praise, Craig S. Lent, said he changed his name to Lent.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just going to assume.
These people are crazy.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, boy.
He was joined by Bill Communion.
very and David Easter.
Craig Lent said that the group was not nefarious or controversial, but its policy was not to confirm whether Ms. Barrett or anyone else was a member. Mr. Lent, whose title overall coordinator, who has belonged to the group for nearly 40 years, said in interviews that the group was about building community and long-term relationships, and that members have a wide spectrum of political views. We don't try to control people, said Mr. Lent. Again, a guy who was so controlled, he changed his name to Lent. Let's be honest about it. That's just not... No. Who is also a professor of electrical engineering and physics at Notre Dame. Sounds just like a whack job.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
There's never any guarantee that the leader is always right. You have to discern and act in the Lord. He later added, if and when members hold political offices or judicial offices or administrative offices, we would certainly not tell them how to discharge their responsibilities. Again, it just seems like the type of thing that this is going to sound great to Think Progress, right? Yep. This argument is going to seem really compelling to raise money for Media Matters. You know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is going to be able to make a big deal about this when she's raising money for her campaign. But it's not real, right? I mean, it doesn't seem like it's an actual legitimate point to be brought up. It's trying to scare people to think she's too religious and therefore can't be accepted.
Right. And I'm sorry, what's the difference between that and this from Nancy Pelosi?
They ask me all the time, what is your favorite this? What is your favorite that? What's your favorite that? And at one time, what is your favorite word? And I said, my favorite word, that is
easy.
Really easy.
It's easy.
My favorite word is the word.
The word.
Mm-hmm.
The word
is the word.
That is the word.
And
that's two words.
Everything.
It's
it
everything.
Says it all.
Says it
us.
All.
And you know the biblical reference.
You know
the gospel reference of the word.
The word.
And
the
that
word. That is
word.
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 Is.
We have to give voice.
We have to give
to
voice.
What that means in terms of public policy that would be in keeping with.
In terms of public policy.
What kind of crazy nut job wackiness was that? Wait, the word gives voice to your public policy?
Can you imagine if one of these Supreme Court justices
nobody
had
any
this?
Trouble with that?
No.
You're telling me you make laws based on the word?
Yeah.
Hope so. I wish you did, because I know that you're ignoring the word when you make public policy. If you're Nancy Pelosi.
Right.
I wish they would listen to the word. But nobody was scared of that.
No. And part of the reason why no one was scared of that is no one believes that she actually thinks it.
True.
Like, no one believes she does that at all. I mean, I love how the whole point of her is to say that it's the word and to give voice to the word, but she won't actually say the word. Love that.
It's true. It's true.
She, you know, this is her, you know, Nancy Pelosi is famous for this, right?
Yeah.
She acts mega religious in certain moments, but then
with religious people, she's pandering to them, that's what she says.
When it's time to get donations, from a religious group, she sounds like that.
Yep.
But she doesn't act like that.
Not at all.
And that's what they're comfortable with. That's actually what the left likes. Hey, you don't want to come out and you want to give a little voice to faith and stuff so we can suck in some of those people? Great.
You bet.
As long as you don't vote like that, fine. Mm. And they get scared
as
of the opposite.
As long as you want to pander... Right. Mm-hmm. As long as it's just pandering, we're completely comfortable
with
it. But if you mean it, We don't want anything to do with you.
And this is reflected in their view of the founders as well. I mean,
yeah,
their argument when we bring out a David Barton document, you know, David's dug up some letter that George Washington wrote, and it's all faithful, and it sounds so religious. What's the reason? Oh, well, that was just their public face. They just said those things because they knew the people were religious. They weren't really religious. That had nothing to do with this. Most of them were secularists. Most of them were
deists
at the most.
Uh-huh.
And it's like their idea is politicians lie, and they were playing this religious face to the people.
Mm,
it reveals a lot about
what
they are doing.
Yeah.
That's what they are doing.
Yep.
You know, it's what many politicians have done throughout history. It is a common practice to essentially fake your faith to win over the people and then vote however you want. So that's very familiar to the left.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they're applying that. There's nothing wrong with having faith. In fact, it's very common here in our history. Our society was built on the idea that faithful people could make public decisions.
Absolutely.
Based on a central, not only their own personal opinion, because that's not what this is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about, can you analyze the Constitution and stick to it? That's what it's supposed to be about, period. And there's no reason here. Someone run in and said, well, we need Carson Wentz, not Ryan Leaf. It's a first round draft pick. You got to, your first overall pick, mm-hmm. pick the person who you think is going to be best. Don't try to massage it. Don't try to pick, you know, someone who you think might pass muster with some liberals. Pick the most conservative person you have that, and conservative is not even the right way to say it. The constitutionalist. That's what you need here. And, you know, look, a lot of people are defending Kavanaugh, which is one of the people we brought up with that could be a risk. Ben Shapiro kind of said, I'm worried about this. A couple of other healthcare experts did not like the way he looked at Obamacare. However, overall, he looks pretty solid. Ed Whelan at National Review has been one of his defenders, and he's a pretty smart guy, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not universal. I just feel like I'm just running away from risk here.
Yeah.
I am risk averse with
anybody who looks like they could go the other way, you should run from.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've learned from Souter and Sandra Day O'Connor and Anthony Kennedy. We've been down that road a million times.
Yeah.
And we don't need to go down that road again.
I mean, look at this. The reason why Roe versus Wade was not overturned is because Ronald freaking Reagan missed.
Right.
That's how hard this is to do.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that is a big statement. This is not, yeah. People are like, oh, well, you know what? You don't think Trump can pick another justice? It's hard.
It's really hard.
I mean, you know, Bush probably went, I would say, 1 for 2. You know, it looks mm-hmm. like Gorsuch is a home run so far, but we don't know. It's not long enough to really tell. But I mean, Reagan went 1 for 2, right?
Yes.
Or he actually had more than that.
We had O'Connor.
Yep. And O'Connor, he missed with. Kennedy, he missed with.
Missed with.
Right. Okay. And Thomas was Bush, right? Was Thomas Bush?
Thomas was Bush.
Yeah. So, I mean,
mm-hmm.
this is hard to do.
Yeah.
It's not a criticism of the president or this process or anything. If you have any element of risk whatsoever, eliminate it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Don't miss with this one. Because even Reagan missed. Twice.
It's Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program.
Glenn Beck.
Pat and Stu for Glenn. 888-727-BECK. There are some things you should be concerned about in a Supreme Court justice.
Okay.
Let me share one of those with you.
You should certainly be aided by all the...
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
...constitution writing that has gone on...
Aided?
...since the end of World War II.
Yeah, wait. We should be helped by the constitution writing since
World War
II. I
would not look to the U.S. Constitution if I were drafting a constitution year 2012.
Right, because it's such an old document, right?
So, I might look at the Constitution of South Africa.
Right.
That was a deliberate attempt.
A deliberate event.
To have a fundamental instrument of government that embraced basic human rights.
Sure.
Had an independent judiciary.
We don't have that.
A great piece of work that was done. Much more recently than the U.S. Constitution, Canada.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Has a Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Uh-huh. And that was from 1982.
Oh,
so
wow.
Those are way better than ours.
What?
That's what you should avoid in a Supreme Court justice. Somebody who doesn't even care about our Constitution.
Wow.
How about that?
Glenn Beck.
Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. 888-727-BECK. We've been kicking around the Supreme Court nominee a little bit today and kind of going over Whether or not religion should be a litmus test against nominating a Supreme Court justice seems somewhat unconstitutional. But that's what they're doing kind of right now to Amy Coney Barrett. She belongs to a religious group. And, well, she's Catholic. But then there's some subsection within the religion. She's belongs to something called People of Praise, which I'm not that familiar with. But they make covenants with each other. Oh, no, that's a scary word for progressives. You've made a covenant? Oh, okay. So that means you're going to have to call that person and get their advice on all your Supreme Court decisions? No, that's not what that means. Is there anything really concerning in it all, though? Have you seen anything that
we know? One thing that's concerning scary? Is one of the heads of the entire organization changed his name to Lent.
Lent, right?
Craig S. Lent, and I don't have any information to back that claim up.
No, and we don't know if he changed his name or that was his given name.
Right, we have no.
We don't know.
I would assume it's probably his given name, but I think to make this scary, we have to say
he changed his name
was
to
like
Lent.
Craig Smith,
mm-hmm.
and he joined this group, and they made him change his name to Craig Lent.
Or he's such a fanatic, he did it on his own volition.
Mm-hmm. Ooh,
but that's almost as scary.
If he acts independently, though, then it's not a cult. So it has to be somebody told him to do this, along with his assistants, Bill Easter, Terry Communion, and Jim Prayer.
That may be the whole leadership of the group. We don't know.
We don't know. Current and former members of People of Praise. I would like to, if there's anyone in the audience who happens to belong to this or know someone who belongs to it or know anything about the group, I really don't know other than the New York Times is trying to scare me into thinking it's terrible. Current and former members of People of Praise said that Ms. Barrett and her husband, who have 7 children, that's too
Oh, there's
kids.
Another tip-off that she's
kids.
Evil.
How
7 children?
How many times did Craig Lent tell her to have a kid? That's what I want to know.
7?
Probably 7. Because that she can't act independently, apparently. They both belong to the group. Their fathers had served as leaders. The group is founded in 1971, claims about 1,800 adult members in 22 locations in North America and the Caribbean. So a pretty small group, relatively. Mm-hmm. Group believes in prophecy, speaking in tongue, and divine healings, staples of Pentecostal churches that some Catholics have adopted in a movement called Charismatic Renewal. People of Praise was an early leader in the flowering of that movement in North America. 90% of it of its members are Catholic. To fulfill the group's communitarian vision, unmarried members are sometimes placed to live in homes with married couples and their children, and members often look to buy or rent homes near other members.
No. No.
You're just controlling their real estate choices now.
Yep. Okay, cross
first, first Lent, just name the guy Lent. Now, you just put him on Zillow. It's got to be within a radius of other people's houses. That's almost like a community. It sounds like a community.
Cross her off the list. I say cross her off the list.
Mm-hmm.
She's clearly a kook.
Some former members criticized the group from deviating from Catholic doctrine, which does not teach male headship, in contrast to some evangelical churches. The personal advisors can be too controlling, the critics say. They may betray confidences, and too often, they supplant the role of priest.
There you go.
So, I mean, basically, right. We can tell here that this is
okay.
This is way off the list.
So is that scarier than this from Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Well, I can't speak about what the Egyptian experience should be.
On doing their new constitution, this was 2012-ish when they had their revolution there and they were talking about putting together the constitution. So she was asked about that.
Because I'm operating under a rather old constitution.
Old, right? Yeah.
The United States, in comparison to Egypt, is a very new nation.
Yeah, but
and yet we have the
old.
The oldest written constitution still in force in the world.
Amen.
Which is obviously a bad thing that it's lasted this long and it's been this durable.
Seems like maybe they got it right. Man, that is such a revealing
point. Is that amazing?
Because she's not even, like, her, when she's in the court, right, she's speaking on behalf of the court. Mm-hmm. She comes up with ridiculous justifications to say her decisions are
constitutional. Yeah. That's what they always do. The left doesn't come out and say, you know what, we don't think this is in the Constitution, but this is what we think it should be. I mean, occasionally they hint at those things in their decisions, but this is her telling you,
I don't believe in the Constitution.
No, it sucks. Why would this is not the right way to go.
We need to play this. We started playing this, but we didn't have time to finish it. Listen to what she was saying when they were asking her about the Constitution and giving advice to other countries on their Constitution.
You should certainly be aided by all the Constitution writing that has gone on since the end of World War II.
Inner Supreme Court decisions. That's right. This was a 2012 interview, and they were asking her about how she bases her decisions on. So she should be aided by all the constitutions that have been written since World War II. Wait, what? No, absolutely not. I mean, that is the exact opposite. You shouldn't be influenced by anybody else's constitution. There, it doesn't matter at all.
No, completely unrelated. In fact, I would say restricted. You're not allowed to look at them.
Right.
Not look to the U.S. Constitution if I were drafting a constitution in the year 2012. Mm. I might look at the Constitution of South Africa. That was a deliberate.
That's where I'd go to. It's.
To have a fundamental.
Well, I don't know if you know this, Pat, but South Africa has been a shining example
of liberty.
Of liberty throughout
forever.
The days.
Right?
Yes. We all long to someday figure it out the way South Africa has.
Well, if only.
We'll ever get there.
Stu, because it's something we can only aspire to, we can never achieve.
It's the it's the eternal harmony of South Africa.
I mean, what a ludicrous,
so dumb.
It's just ridiculous.
Embraced
basic
human rights.
Basic human rights.
Had an independent judiciary. It really is, I think.
What a concept. An independent judiciary? Who's ever heard of that? Where do you think these people are getting the ideas? From us. From us.
Piece of work that was done.
Oh, man.
Much more recently than the U.S. Constitution, the Canada,
sure,
has a Charter of Rights and Freedoms, dates from 1982.
Oh, 82. Wow. First of all, that's a good year, Pat.
That was a really good year.
Really good
it
year.
Was a good year for wine. It was a good year for constitutions.
Gremlins? Didn't Gremlins come out around 1982?
That's close.
You want to make sure.
It might be even more recent for Gremlins. Though.
Really?
I think it was 84.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I'm not positive.
See, that's the thing. Maybe we should learn from Gremlins. In that, why not? Why 1982? That's old. What about a new constitution every Wednesday? What about that?
It's Constitution Wednesday.
It's every Wednesday.
Tweet us your ideas for a new amendment.
Every Wednesday, we all tune in together and see what the law of the land is.
I like it. I like it a lot.
What is the limiting principle? Well, I want to know. You go on there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we just tweet it out line by line.
Yeah, well, everyone gathers Iceland around Twitter. Did that. We should learn a lesson from Iceland. Back in, what was it, 2010 or 12, 14, somewhere in there, when they were doing a new, they wanted ideas tweeted to them. And I think we should do the same thing. And I think you're right. I think it should be every Wednesday. Just pick a day and start tweeting us constitutional ideas, and we'll just put them into a new constitution and finally get rid of this old dusty piece of crap we have. Just set fire to it. Why?
It's so old. But you know what? The best thing about it is it's so old. It's incredibly flammable, so it would light up right away.
Yeah, it's
you wouldn't even need lighter fluid.
Very dried up parchment.
Right?
So it'll burn fast.
Look at the European Convention on Human Rights.
Right.
So,
look at that.
Yes, why not take advantage of what there is elsewhere in the world?
Because you're not supposed to, because that has nothing to do with your judicial decision here based on our constitution. I mean, so that shows you there's somebody who doesn't even believe in our constitution that's sitting on the U.S. Supreme Court right now.
Yeah.
But they don't have any problem with that.
No, not at all.
They have a problem with Amy Coney Barrett because she's religious.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg, also famous for continually falling asleep in the middle of her job. Which is interesting because she's one of the few people it's actually better if she's asleep. Like, I would much rather have her just kind of sleep through all of this and maybe not even vote. at the end, just kind of just got to sleep through it. Ruth, what do you want to? Oh, she's out.
Yeah.
Okay. She's asleep.
Shh. Everybody talk about this quietly.
Soothing tones, guys. Soothing tones. Look, she's 85 years old. And, you know, we talk about this a lot. And I think the social media has ruined this in some way. I would rather have a Ruth Bader Ginsburg admitting things like that. I'd rather have her be honest rather than what does in the court, which is lie and act as if she cares about the Constitution. Be honest, like she just was there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Come out and admit it. And I think because people get beat up so badly from social media when they tweet their real opinions, people now hold them in and hide them. I'd rather know who people are. I'd rather know.
Yeah.
You know, they always, you know, we wind up trying to fire every comedian who makes a joke that's off color or every politician who makes a comment that doesn't work. I'd rather just judge it on its merit, vote them out when it comes time. Don't watch their show if you don't like it, whatever the case may be.
How many times have we said, at least we respect Bernie Sanders because he admits it. He's a socialist. I respect this millennial in the Bronx because she admits it. She's a democratic socialist.
Yeah.
You got too many Democrats right now who are trying to pretend like they're actual Democrats when they're actually socialists. Most of the party has become so left-wing that there's no difference between them and socialists or communists. There's no difference.
And it's about to get a lot worse.
Yeah.
You know, when you see these high-profile kind of glamorous cases like Ocasio-Cortez in New York, where you're getting a democratic socialist, an admitted one, who comes out and says, hey, this is what I'm doing. I want free, guaranteed jobs, free college, all of the nonsense that goes along with the democratic socialist platform that is completely unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And you have that not only winning, but a media glorified win, right? They're coming to her aid and saying, what an amazing thing this is. And as that happens, the praise will go to people like Bernie Sanders and people who supported Bernie. And you will have a Democratic Party that will be even unfamiliar to the one that elected Barack Obama. I mean, we're going to find a place. You know, I mean, Barack Obama was, I think, in many ways much further left than he led on in a normal, everyday way.
No doubt about it.
I mean, there's no doubt about that. But he at least was trying to hide it. Now you're going to get to that point where they're coming out and just unmasking, as Glenn has said for many years. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be, when that is the only way you can win a primary is to be a socialist, that's going to be an interesting world. But
I think we're almost there with the Democrats.
Yeah.
We're there. 888-727-BECK. It's Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. I don't know if you're aware of this, Stu. Another ominous record-breaking heat temperature has been set.
Oh, no.
Or in the words of more like Al Gore, another ominous record have been set. The city of Kiryat, Oman, hit an overnight low of 108.7 degrees on Tuesday, likely the highest minimum daily temperature recorded on Earth. And that's ominous because, I don't know, we didn't have any records before now. There were no records.
There were no records.
It never happened. Mm-hmm. Everything was the same until now. And now we're starting to set records all the time.
You know what they say? Records were made to be insurmountable.
That is what they say, yeah. Isn't it?
Records were made to be insurmountable and never
and
be
yet,
broken.
It's been surmounted. And
which
so,
shows Al Gore was right.
He was
this
right.
Whole time. By the way, his last movie pretty much bombed, didn't it?
It did.
Remember when there was a big buildup to
$3 million or something in the United States.
That's sad. People didn't want to watch Al talk about graphs anymore.
I wonder if it had anything to do with the first time he did it. It was mostly bogus. I wonder if
that's not consistent with the liberals that I know. That they would be like, oh, well, it wasn't true last time. I don't trust him this time. That's not consistent with many on the left that I've run into.
So what do you think it was? Are we just not, they're just not interested in climate change anymore?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. It seems like such a, it's not the marquee attention point right now, right? Donald Trump is.
Yep.
Right? The thing that's exciting them right now is opposition to Donald Trump, not
you know, 0.9 degrees over a century.
The resistance. Well,
and like, it shows how dumb the claim is, right? We've talked about this for a long time. You know, even if you believe everything that Al Gore says, there's a lot of time and a lot of decisions and a lot of things that could happen. For example, massive scientific advancement, right? Where, like, there's no reason to believe that Elon Musk in 5 years doesn't come up with some solar panel that solves all of these problems in a minute.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's that it just was so ridiculous to think that now is the time to restrict economies by multiple trillions of dollars globally to try to stop 0.9 degrees over a century and a little bit more after that. And so it doesn't have any intensity to it, right? Like, I think there was a time where they tried every maximalist claim to make it seem like the worst thing was happening right now. And it just doesn't prove out, right?
Yeah. And they have to continually hype up the hysteria around this to keep people's interest. Like, we were talking yesterday about the, on my show on Pat Gray Unleashed, on the Blaze Radio TV network, which you can listen to immediately following this show. Or check it out anytime on podcast and just download it.
You should.
Listen to it whenever you please. Mm-hmm. But we were talking about the Pacific Ocean garbage patch. Have you heard about that?
I have heard a little bit about it.
Okay. It is,
is it real?
Double the size of Texas. Two times the size of Texas.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty freaking big. It's bigger than Alaska. And it's out there somewhere in the middle of the ocean.
Wait, it's this big and they don't know where it is?
And no. Well, they know approximately where it is, but strangely, there is no photo of it. You can't find an image of the garbage patch.
This does not seem real.
So I started looking on the internet for an image. I wanted to see if anybody had one. And, you know, you can find garbage in waterways in Singapore or whatever. But you can't find this size of Texas or Alaska garbage patch in the Pacific Ocean. You just can't find it because it doesn't exist. And I finally found an article on Slate that said that the garbage patch is not real. I mean, they admitted it. It's mostly in people's minds. And it was made up. I wish I could find the exact quote. I got to find this because it's amazing.
So basically, they're saying
made up to hype up global warming and climate change and catastrophe because the oceans weren't clean enough. And so they had to hype up how dirty it is. And so in order to get people interested, they lied about how nasty this problem is. And they just made it up. And people continued to report it. And he said the story got bigger as it went. First of all, it was 3 million tons of garbage. Then it was the size of Texas. Then it was double the size of Texas. Then it was the size of a continent. I mean,
unreal.
So it's pretty amazing. I'll have to try to find the article.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. So are they just saying that, like, essentially, if you added up all the trash in the ocean and you put it next to each other, it would be the size of Texas? Is that kind of the scam?
I don't think it's even,
it's not even that
big a problem. <That's great. laughs> I don't think
so. So a few years ago, Glenn and Tanya started a company called realestateagentsitrust.com. Why did they do that? Well, they did it because they were having a real frustration trying to sell their house. And you might think, oh, Glenn must have been a nightmare to be around when he was whining about his house every day. And I will say, yes, he was. I was there. It was not fun. So I'm glad he started realestateagentsitrust.com. And I think you'll be too, because if you're trying to sell your house fast and for the most money, or if you're looking to buy, realestateagentsitrust.com is the place to go. They've got over 1,200 agents all over America that are rigorously qualified by Glenn's team. Experience, marketing plans, character, and the results they get are the barometers they use to find the best agents in America, and then they don't let anybody else sign up. So you have the best agents in your area available. All the work is done for you at realestateagentsitrust.com. Realestateagentsitrust.com, it's the place to go to make sure the biggest investment you'll ever make goes smoothly. Let these agents earn your business. Get moving with realestateagentsitrust.com.
It's Pat and Stu for Glenn. 888-727 back. We were talking about Al Gore and his hysteria over the fact that they had the record high low temperature set on Earth the other night in
The record high low.
Yes. It's never been hotter at night than it was the other night in the Middle East. 108 degrees. 108.7. That's pretty warm at night.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to keep the windows open. No,
probably not.
No.
You wouldn't get an awful lot of relief from that. So it led us into the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which is just an incredible shame.
Because this has been making the rounds lately for
it
some
has.
Reason. Again, why is that? Do you know?
It was invented a long time ago, and now for some reason it's resurfaced. And I don't really know why, but you're right. There might be an email floating around. A lot of times that's what prompts some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to talking about this yesterday and just looked in. I just believed it. I just believed that, okay, there's, you know, a garbage patch twice the size of Texas in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. I don't know why I believed it. I just accepted it and shouldn't have. Found this article in Slate that is from September of 2016. There is no island of trash in the Pacific.
Hmm.
But the cause of clean oceans needed a good story. And our warming plant could use another one. I love it when they just admit, yeah, we make these things up to create the hysteria so people will listen to us. I mean, Gore has always kind of admitted that too, or at least he used to.
Mm-hmm.
He used to say that you have to kind of exaggerate things to get people to move.
What would you say? It's kind of like to capture the public imagination, we have to offer up some scary scenarios, make simplified dramatic statements, and little mention of any doubts one might have. Each of us has to decide the right balance between being effective and being honest.
Wow.
End quote. That's from Stephen Schneider, who is a UN IPCC report author. This is a guy in the UN IPCC is the thing that Gore talks about all the time. It's like the big UN climate report they do every few years. That is, like, to me, the fundamental mission statement of environmentalism. Let me give it to you one more time. To capture the public imagination, we have to offer up some scary scenarios, make simplified dramatic statements, and little mention of any doubts one might have. Each of us has to decide the right balance of being effective and being honest. I mean, that is the most crystal clear, most honest thing you've ever heard from an environmentalist.
Yeah.
And that was made in 1989 by Stephen Schneider, who wound up to become a he was Stanford, I believe, and he was wound up being a UN IPCC author, as I mentioned, was a lead environmentalist until he died in 2010. He made that statement long before we had Al Gore-esque debates. This is basically the environmentalist constitution. It's that is exactly how, because it's not as if every one of their claims has no evidence, as this garbage patch does. Like, for example, the garbage patch is a good example of it. Garbage patch. Is there trash in the ocean? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is there more than we'd like? Sure.
Mm-hmm. Is there one that's twice the size of Texas?
Not even close.
No.
And is it a real problem? I mean, it's highly debatable as to whether it's an actual real problem. I mean, this is a mass. It's a lot of water out there.
Yeah.
And so you don't want any trash in there. We'd like to clean it up. There are problems associated with it, but it's not this mega disaster that they try to make it out to be. So to capture the public imagination, they made scary scenarios and simplified dramatic statements. There's a giant, two times the size of Texas, floating in the middle of the ocean somewhere in the Pacific, right?
Yeah, that's how bad things are. I mean, I was kind of convinced, and I thought, well, okay, how did it all end up in one place? I guess the
current?
Ocean current?
Right. Because you could see that if you've ever been at a lake, right, where maybe, you know, there's like party boats that go out in the lake and people occasionally throw cans off the side. You'll see them collect in one area of the lake sometimes. You know what I mean? Something like that where like the current or the motion of the boats, they create some waves and they push all the garbage into kind of one area. Everybody's seen that. So in your mind, you're thinking, well, maybe that happens in the Pacific Ocean. That's just a giant, like, do people have to route around it? I mean, imagine as you're going towards the giant two times the size of Texas garbage barge in the middle of the Pacific.
That's a lot of garbage.
A lot of extra time
and
to traverse it.
That would make for quite a photo. And to think that there isn't one on the internet that you can find is pretty amazing.
It's a good example, too, of how technology has solved a lot of these problems, because there would be a photo.
Yeah,
you have
there
a
would.
Drone even there have to over be. There.
A satellite. Right.
Yeah,
some satellite, kind of photo. Something. A plane. You take a snap of that from somewhere, and you wouldn't be able to get it all in one photo, but still, I mean, maybe from a satellite you could. Mm. But to when you go and search for the images and you can't find any... that should tell you something, and it does, and that's why I was so surprised to find this honesty in Slate. The author writes, but the Great Pacific Garbage Patch has always been less substantial than it sounds, less an island in the ocean than a big idea that floats around inside our heads.
Mm.
It's a throwback to the time when environmental threats were made of solid things, empty bottles, fishing nets, nuclear waste, canisters of slime that could be gathered up and buried or incinerated. In a way, that's the very problem with the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. That's the problem it helped to solve when the concept was invented. Like its mirror image, the hole in the ozone layer.
Wait, what?
The hole in the ozone layer, which he's admitting also kind of didn't exist.
It's amazing.
Isn't that it's crazy.
And I was a kid in that era. When was that? That was the 80s, right?
Yeah.
When they were talking about that.
Yeah.
And I remember
that was
thinking
a big deal for a while.
It was just real.
We were all going to burn up with cancer.
Yeah.
Because of the hole in the ozone layer. And then it fixed itself. And then another hole appeared and it fixed itself.
Well, the Montreal Protocol, of course, was important in that.
Montreal Protocol.
But still,
yeah,
I mean,
it's
like,
when we stopped using canisters of...
You know, this is what it's so frustrating about these environmental debates, mm-hmm. though. They act as if, you know, it's one of those things is like, well, it's like going to someone and saying, hey, I just saw what you ate. And if you keep doing that, you know, you're going to be 500 pounds. Well, it's Thanksgiving. Like I eat that way on Thanksgiving, then I don't eat that way other days. So when you realize if there's a major problem, which has happened at times, I mean, go back and look at like Pittsburgh. In history, when it was just a giant cloud of smoke, over times when civilizations become more advanced and, most importantly, more wealthy, they start caring about things like environmentalism. You don't care about it. Who doesn't care about those things are people who can't eat. Right? It's it's when you get to a point where it becomes a luxury problem.
Yeah.
And you
have enough food,
so
now you can focus on something else.
On something else. And some of those things are really important, but they're not imminent all the time. And that's why they have to use the phrasing we talked about, scary scenarios. Make it seem simple. Don't act as if we have any doubt, because then people won't jump on board.
That's why they always call it settled science.
Mm-hmm.
It's a settled debate.
Mm-hmm.
There's consensus. When there's nothing like consensus, we just had a list of... I don't know, 36,000 or something scientists who are not on board with it, at least not on board with catastrophic man-caused climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them believe that the Earth has warmed somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, why? And is that just part of the normal process of the planet? And of course it is, because it happens all the time.
Yeah, and there's multiple levels to the whole claim. And this is why they try to generalize it all. You don't believe, if you don't agree with Al Gore, you're a science denier.
Yeah.
But the Al Gore position and anyone on the left's position here is multifaceted. It's not just has the Earth warmed. Is the Earth warmed, and is it caused by man? Not only is it caused by man, but is it almost entirely caused by man? And not only is it entirely caused by man, but will it run out of control and become a catastrophic situation?
Mm-hmm.
And not only does it run out of control and be a catastrophic situation, but do you agree with these policies to stop it, which is large amounts of government control?
And the answer to all those questions has to be yes, or you're a climate denier.
All of them. You can't just, like, let's just say you're Elon Musk. Okay, I'm throwing this out here because he is very much on the global warming bandwagon. But let's say you're Elon Musk. And he goes down the bandwagon. He believes, yes, it's warmed. Yes, it's man-made. Yes, it's entirely man-made. Yes, it's catastrophic. But the way we're going to solve that is I'm going to create a solar panel company, and I'm going to change the world with innovation. That's a global warming denier position if he were to believe it. He also believes in government intervention, so he's okay. But if he just believed, if he was a Koch brother, and he said, you know what? I'm going to create a company that's going to solve this without one dime of government funding or government regulation. Don't change regulations. Don't do this. Let me solve it. That person would be a denier. He'd be out for profit.
He'd be an enemy of the state because this is all about government control. It's not about the environment. It isn't. And of course, there are some crazy people who go really far on these things. I was just going back as I was finding that environmental constitution that we just kind of went over from Stephen Schneider about making false claims.
Yeah.
I found that in An Inconvenient Book, one of Glenn's first, I think it was his first number one bestseller. And in there are a bunch of great quotes. There's a section called Environmentalists Say the Darndest Things. And that's one. The one quote I read a minute ago is one of them. But listen to some of these. This is so classic. Dave Foreman, the founder of Earth First, said, "Phasing out the human race will solve every problem on Earth, social and environmental." It does create one additional problem I can think of, which is no one's there to enjoy the paradise. Jacques Chirac, remember him? President of France.
Oh, yeah.
He was talking about the Kyoto Protocol, which was the first thing, you know, that was supposed to, you know, be the way that we stop global warming, which
we didn't sign on to.
Al Gore,
thank goodness,
didn't. The Senate voted it down like 98-0. But he said Kyoto is the first component of an authentic global governance.
Wow.
Wow. How about this is a classic. Paul Ehrlich, who is one of my favorites. I would take this. He said this in 1969.
Ehrlich was maybe really, one of the worst.
He was really one of the worst.
Yeah.
But one of the most famous and was embraced by the environmental movement.
Very successful, very respected, except by those who pay attention to what he said then and what happened.
Because this is not some crazy person. This is someone who is a well-respected scientist and embraced by environmentalists. He said in 1969, "I would take even money that England will not exist in the year 2000. That's a solid one.
And of course, I've missed England for these last 18 years.
It's been rough without
it. Yeah, it's been tough. Mm-hmm. It's been tough.
I mean, look at Brexit. It's showing that this is real. It's actually, England seems to be coming back to life and taking its own independence.
Kind of, yeah.
How about in 10 years, all important animal life in the sea will be extinct. He said this in 1970, by the way. Large areas of coastline will have to be evacuated.
Yeah, but if he would have said that this year, I'd really be scared.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't think he's alive anymore.
Large areas of coastline will have to be evacuated because of the stench of dead fish. He said that in 1970.
Jeez.
1978. Again, think of the motivation behind this. What do we want with energy? We want people to be able to do what they want to do. Air conditioning, all the amenities of life, not just for pleasure, but also for survival and civilization. He said, giving society cheap, abundant energy would be the equivalent of giving an idiot child a machine gun. Said that in 1978.
Unbelievable.
Again, well respected.
Yeah.
Not just some lunatic.
And wrong on everything. Mm-hmm. Absolutely everything.
Prince Philip from the World Wildlife Federation.
Mm-hmm.
If I were reincarnated, I would wish to be returned to Earth as a killer virus to lower human population levels. These are quotes.
I mean, geez.
George Monbiot. Monbiot, I can never think of how to pronounce his last name. He was the environmental author. In 2006, said every time someone dies as a result of floods in Bangladesh, an airline executive should be dragged out of his office and drowned.
Wow.
Helen Caldicott from the Union of Concerned Scientists. Union of Concerned Scientists is a great group because they will constantly, they're the ones that get these nice high profile articles. Release like, did you know that having one diet soda every 16 years will kill everyone in your family? They're those people. Everything is going to kill you. Every, you know, anytime a company does something, you're going to die. And here is the motivation behind it. Quote, free enterprise really means rich people getting richer. They have the freedom to exploit and psychologically rape their fellow human beings in the process. Capitalism is destroying the earth. Again, it's not just about the environment. It's about destroying capitalism.
Yeah, because the green movement is the new communism.
Mm-hmm.
It just is. And some of them even admit that.
Yeah. And this one is the most, in some ways, the worst. This is from Michael Oppenheimer, Environmental Defense Fund. The only hope for the world is to make sure that there is not another United States. We can't let countries that have the same amount of cars, same amount of industrialization that we have in the U.S., we have to stop these third world countries right where they are. I mean, what a
racist
bastard. Yeah. I mean, think about that. These are people who are trying to live.
I mean, that's true racism right there.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And do you remember this Earth Day claim a few years ago?
The world is using the equivalent of 1.5 planets to support life on Earth.
Wait, what? What other planet have we used half of? I didn't remember borrowing half of another planet. 888-900. No, 888-727-BECK. It's Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program.
Glenn Beck.
Coming up, Jeffy's going to join us, and we're going to taste test the new Dunkin' Donuts donut fries.
Oh, you can't miss this.
They exist. We have them. We are going to taste test them and give you important information for your July 4th holiday.
Much bigger than the Supreme Court nominee.
Oh, yeah.
Much.
About that. We're talking donut fries here.
Glenn Beck.
It's Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. You can also listen to my show, Pat Gray Unleashed, which immediately follows this on the Blaze Radio and TV Network. And of course, Stu and I will be back, not tomorrow because it's 4th of July, but Thursday together. And then I'll be doing the show on Friday. And then Glenn will be back next week. And I think you're gone, aren't you? Are you going somewhere?
Yeah,
you
got
doing
a couple something? Weeks off. I'm excited about it.
Are you going anywhere?
Going to see the family up in Connecticut.
Oh, okay.
For
all right.
A little...
Should be a little cooler.
Family vacation, which will be very nice. And my mom's coming in to visit for a couple of days. It's going to be fun.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
You know, a little family time.
Uh-huh.
Little family time, so I'm excited about it.
Okay. Apparently, Timothy Geithner is back in the news. And it's been so long since he's been in the news, I didn't even remember his last name.
Yeah, you might remember him from the early Obama days.
Secretary of Treasury.
Yes, and one of the big issues with him is he used TurboTax. He blamed TurboTax for his tax problems. Remember
oh, that's
this?
Right. Yeah.
And everyone's like, wait a minute, you can't have tax problems. And you're going to be the Secretary of the Treasury. You need to be able to pay your taxes.
Yeah.
Well, he is back in the news, and he's got a new business he's been working on.
Okay.
It's very exciting.
What's he doing?
Well, he's you know how giving the Obama administration was. It was solving all of our problems.
Well, Obama phones.
Oh, yeah. Obama phones, right?
Yeah.
So this is, he's kind of doing
cash.
That.
Obama phones, Obama cash.
Yeah. He's basically doing that. It's now Geithner cash, though. So what Geithner's apparently running a business, this is amazing. I didn't know this type of business existed. It doesn't seem on its face to be a good business. What they're doing is the business is they send checks to poor people.
Oh, well, that seems nice. They just
really
send
nice.
Them free money?
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like it's a good business. It seems nice, but it doesn't seem like a good business,
no,
right?
It seems like you'd go broke doing
yeah.
that.
Yeah, well, not if you do it this way. What they're doing is they're sending checks to poor people.
Okay.
And when they receive the checks, they deposit those checks.
I mean, are they big checks or like a dollar?
$1,200, $2,000.
No. Wow.
Some good chunk of cash if you're like on the brink, right?
Okay.
Maybe you got a car repair that's just happened. That's one of the highlights stories they highlight here in the Washington Post today.
And what is the check? What is it? Is there something that accompanies it that says, hey, here's a check from Timothy Geithner just because we really like you and we heard you're not doing well.
You seem nice.
I mean, I don't know you, but it seems like you might be nice because you're a low-income person. And low-income people are generally nice.
Yeah, generally nice.
Here's some money.
We know you're not one of those evil rich CEOs, which those people are all bastards.
Oh, my gosh. You know that's
true. I hate
you
them.
You know that's true.
I hate those people.
The Koch brothers?
Oh, gosh.
Nobody more evil.
You know how many
Koch
brothers there are? They have 1,000 brothers in that family.
Wow.
They're all trillionaires.
Wow.
It's true.
Well, they've got all of the world's wealth right in that family.
Yeah.
All of it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else has any wealth.
Right. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And they all, by the way, my favorite observation on the Koch brothers is there's really only two of them. And one of them just retired, by the way.
And they're both somewhat left of center.
Yeah. And
generally speaking, on social issues.
They're libertarian leaning, although they seem to have an affinity for certain tax increases and strange things like that. But they're very like open borders. And
while climate change has been pinned on them, at least one of them agrees with climate change.
Yeah.
Believes in climate change.
But what's interesting is like they're adults.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you're an adult, you don't become the blank brothers anymore, right? Like you're two individuals. There's Charles and David, right?
Yeah.
And so they not only I understand that they kind of like ran this business together, so they had similar levels of wealth, which would make sense. But if you look at them being listed, they'll just say they have the exact same amount of money. It's like they both have like $24 billion or something. And it's like none of them made a different choice to like buy a truck when the other one didn't. There was never a time when one went out to dinner and spent a lot and the other didn't.
There was never a moment where one invested in something that didn't go right and the other invested in something that worked. There's never been any separation. They have the exact same accounts.
Exact same. Yeah.
That's always amazed me.
Forever.
So anyway, Tim Geithner is not at that
level.
But
there's only two of them? Because I thought there was, okay, there's Charles, there's David, Tito, Marlon, and Jermaine.
No, I think you have that.
Right?
I think it might have something else confused there.
Well, okay, maybe I'll look into that.
We'll walk you through that in a minute. Tim Geithner, though, is not that rich, and he does not have a brother named Marlon.
Okay.
He does have this company, however, in which, so they send checks to poor people. Legitimately, that's what they do. So that people take the check, and they deposit it in their bank account, and all of a sudden, they have an extra $1,200 or $2,000. Now, of course, there's a level of you that would say, is there a string attached to this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how I would think about it. And some of the people they highlight actually did notice that. But the string attached is, it's just free money. It's a loan. So when you deposit the check, you're agreeing to a loan. The loan, the terms of that loan are interesting. For example, Stephen Huggins received the check for a loan for $1,200. And he didn't want to deposit it at first because he actually realized, okay, this doesn't look right. He thought there's a string attached. The interest rate, 33%.
Whoa. Wow.
33% annual interest rate. But his Chevy pickup was in the shop. He didn't have enough money to pay for the repairs, so he needed the money. He decided to use the check. He got $1,200 from the company, plus an additional $800 from a representative later on. Hundreds of dollars in processing fees, insurance, and other items, plus interest. He's now up to $3,221 that he owes them.
For a $1,200 loan?
For the $2,000, I guess, total he got. So he's up to $3,200.
Jeez.
And now he is being sued because he's not paying it back, I guess, fast enough. And so this is the way what they're doing, because they've now added an extra $536. For extra fees that he's had to do to fight this. And this finance company is going after, they're now saying it's an $11.2 billion private equity fund that is at the charge of this. A president is, of course, Timothy Geithner, who is now, they operate 450 branches in 22 states. And their business is sending these high interest loans to people who, in their worst moments, have to use them. And at 33%, now look, I am not
a believer.
You know,
we've heard about predatory lenders.
Exactly, yeah.
That's the very definition of a predatory lender.
Yes. Now, of course, these people can make choices, right? And to be, I've never liked
but
the term predatory lender.
But is it spelled out clearly to them?
It is. In fine print
okay.
that most people aren't reading.
Yeah.
And just, at the very least, it's a disingenuous business practice. I don't have any problem.
Definitely.
Like, people used to be like, oh, check cashing stores are the devil. Like, you know, well, a check cashing store is okay for certain people who need it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a market of people who can benefit from a check cashing store.
Sure.
And you know what? If you agree to the terms, you agree to the terms. You don't have to go. You agree to the terms, you agree to the terms. That's the way these things work. They're voluntary transactions. And at times, however, some of these companies take advantage of people who might not be reading fine print or maybe not understanding it and making giant profits on it. And now the Obama administration has a nice representative running one of these situations. Geithner.
Is there any explanation from him on how he can live with himself doing this to people, especially people who can least afford it?
Well, this is the thing, Pat. As Treasury Secretary, Geithner excoriated predatory lenders.
Yes.
And their role in the Wall Street meltdown of 2007. The financial crisis exposed our system of consumer protection as a dysfunctional mess, leaving ordinary Americans way too vulnerable to fraud and other malfeasance. Many borrowers, especially in subprime markets, jeez, this guy, bit off more than they could chew because they didn't understand the absurdly complex and opaque terms of their financial agreements or were actively channeled into the riskiest deals.
Wow.
You mean a risky deal like getting a check in the mail at a 33% loan? Could that be a risky deal? I mean, that is...
despicable.
I mean, if it was the evil Koch brothers doing something like this, they might have an argument to say, look, the terms are disclosed. Maybe you think we should write them in larger font. But these people make the choice to take the money.
And that'd be the lead story on every broadcast on CNN and MSNBC.
To be fair, this is the Washington Post with an extensive
analysis, and they really dove into this. Now, look, good. I don't know what beating up on Tim Geithner does for the political discussion at this moment. Because now he's a capitalist, and now it's okay to go after him. Wasn't okay to go after him when he was using TurboTax. Wasn't okay to go after him when he was in the Obama administration and making the arguments about how evil predatory lending was. Now that he's out of there and he's a businessman, I guess you can go after him. But that being said, give credit to the Washington Post here for actually doing a little bit of work and exposing, yeah. I think, I don't know if it's anything illegal, but something really hypocritical.
Unethical anyway.
Hypocritical, sure.
So you know who has a better idea to help the poor is Richard Branson. He's got a great solution to poor people, and that's to send them free money. Just give them free money. Not from Tim Geithner, but from the government. And the government just has a wellspring of money, and I don't know where it comes from. They've just got so much money, and they just give it to people. So that's great. So this is a good idea.
Is that the group that prints those green pieces of paper with the presidents on them?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are really cool.
Those are cool.
Have you used those?
And they can keep doing that over and over and over. You just print it and give it to people.
As long as they have paper.
Yeah.
They have to get paper.
You do have to have
paper. That's why the environment is so important, to keep trees available for us to print money.
So he's also another guy that's on the basic income. Just you just get a basic income bandwagon.
Oh, jeez. This has already failed.
Really becoming prevalent, though. There's a lot of talk of it.
Yeah, they failed. Was it Finland or Denmark?
Finland.
It was Finland that did it, and they have abandoned the transaction. It was amazing. It's a podcast that featured this, maybe 99% Invisible, I think it was, maybe. And they did a whole thing on universal basic income. First of all, did you know that Nixon advocated for this?
Yes.
Which is kind of amazing. I mean, Nixon, the ultimate Republican, right? Huge conservative that not only wanted universal basic income and experimented with it in the United States, by the way, but also wanted to ban all handguns. So, but other than that, we're a real hardcore conservative there. That's one of those guys that he becomes a conservative after the scandal, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he was seen as mean. And look, he was a Republican as opposed to a Democrat. He was more conservative than some people in the country, obviously. But the idea that he was some ideological conservative is insane. He was a progressive Republican.
Big time.
So anyway, he wanted to do that. Finland decided to try to do it. And they had that interview with a woman who was on the basic income giveaway from the Finnish government. And it was interesting what they decided to do. The idea here and the concept of the podcast was to say, what a wonderful way to design policy. Instead of going out and just like passing, let's say, Obamacare. They certainly didn't use that as an example, but just use it for our example. You pass Obamacare. What they say is, all right, like, try things. Maybe you try Obamacare in one community. Maybe you try it over 10,000 people spread across the country. And that's what Finland decided to do. They essentially did a lottery, and in a way, a real lottery, in which they gave away money as universal basic income to a bunch of people.
And I think it was just a few thousand.
It was a few thousand people.
Yeah.
So they interviewed one of them on this podcast, and she's like, I haven't been able to get a job, and it's been really tough, and I just find myself constantly struggling to do the basic things, and now universal basic income has come in, and I get these checks every month, and now I don't have to worry about those things. I'm able to focus on, instead of just scrambling every month to make my bills, I am able to focus on things that are more productive and spend time with my family and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you listen to the whole thing, at the very end, you find out that she hasn't been able to get a job. So the idea was, okay, if you take the struggles of the everyday out of these people's lives, they'll be able to focus on more important things. They'll be able to get a job. They'll be able to hold out for something that's a little bit better. And that's exactly what she wound up doing. Because all of her bills were paid, she held out for something better, and nothing ever came along. She didn't take the day-to-day work because she didn't need the day-to-day work anymore. She just did nothing. Now, she enjoyed her life a lot more, I'm sure. Wouldn't you? If you didn't have to come in here and blab every day, wouldn't that be fantastic? You just sit at home, all your bills are paid?
Yep.
That'd be great.
Yes, it would.
Now, the society falls apart when you do that with everybody.
As Ben Franklin said, people should be made to be uncomfortable in their poverty.
Ben Franklin was pretty smart, wasn't he?
Yeah, smart guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a reason for it, because if they're comfortable in their poverty, just keep taking what you give them.
Yeah.
888-727-BECK. More of Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program coming up. It's Pat and Stu for Glenn. Looks like Bono is upset And he doesn't really direct this toward anybody, but you kind of get the impression he's talking about Donald Trump. He is saying that the United Nations and other international institutions, including the European Union and NATO, are now under threat. Good. Good. Now, that's not good to Bono because he thinks these are all, let's get together and be peaceful and loving to one another. And we can all talk about it at this wonderful organization. The UN needs to fold or be taken, just push it off this continent. Get rid of the UN in the U.S. and get us out of the UN and let them go do whatever they want in Belgium. I don't care. Headquarter NATO and the UN in Brussels. I'm fine with that. And then we're not part of either one of them. We should get out of all these organizations.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, I don't know. I mean, NATO I have a stronger affinity to than the UN. I mean, the UN I see no value in at this point.
None.
Of us. I mean, not to mention we pay, obviously, for the whole thing, basically. But, you know, NATO is still as a, you know, I like, you know, NATO generally in that, you know, there's some value in a, you know, united front of, you know.
The North Atlantic nations who aren't necessarily in the North Atlantic.
No, not at all. But, like, you know, similar thinking principled nations that stand together. I like that. Especially when it comes to defense, in that you like the idea that there's some alliance there. However, lots of asterisks to that. It doesn't seem to operate correctly. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, certainly there's very limited benefit for us. It's really more of a it's something we owe. Right, it's like, well, mm-hmm. hey, some Baltic state just got attacked. We need to step
now
in.
We got, yeah.
Right, like that's really the function of it. Like, there's not, yep. it's not like, you know, Lithuania is going to jump in. I don't know if Lithuania's even in it. But, like, you know, it's like there's not going to be, people aren't going to be jumping to our defense if we get attacked in any meaningful way.
No.
But there are international norms that have, you know, helped probably in the idea of increased war. Right, we are in a period of downturn in violence due to war, despite how many, the terrible narratives that we've heard, which is good. I mean, we have come in the right direction in that front, and NATO's been part of that.
But it is one of the things that I like about Trump. He
doesn't care.
He doesn't care. Mm-hmm. He's American-centric, and if these organizations are one-sided or count on us too much, like the UN, and man, that's certainly true. He's willing to get out there and say, "Yeah, we're not doing this anymore. This is a bad deal for us. We're not doing that." I like that about him.
I do like that too. I don't know that I necessarily agree with his analysis every time he says it. A lot of times, you know, I don't necessarily think that he. I mean, the trade stuff is would be my biggest problem.
Yes,
you know, I mean, a lot of times he says we have. You know, he's been talking about these really bad tariffs with Canada and how they're hitting us with these terrible tariffs, and it's like, well, actually, their tariffs are lower than ours. We have a trade surplus with Canada, not a trade deficit, a trade surplus with Canada.
Right.
You know, we...
Buddy threw out a hot button issue, and that's the 217%.
70%, but it's not even a real tariff.
On milk.
But it's not even a real tariff. It's a two-tier tariff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't kick in. We have almost no milk that actually falls under the tariff. And the thing he pulled out of, the TPP eliminated it. It was already gone. He pulled out of it. It was the only reason it's still there, and it really doesn't make any difference anyway.
Yeah.
Almost no dairy products fall under that tariff, and that's been the one that they've talked about incessantly. And again, he's right in that there are problems with trade. Other countries do things that are poor. I fully support his argument, Donald Trump's argument that he made when he talked to the G7, which was, hey, eliminate all tariffs for everybody. Now, I think most people ignored that because they don't believe he's serious about it. And I think he just threw it out there as a rhetorical device.
But
I support it fully.
Me too.
And you know what? It is revealing that these other countries didn't go, okay, we'll take you up on that. They didn't.
Yeah.
So I think that was the point Trump was trying to make. I'd rather see it as a real policy. Go for it, man. Get rid of these things. They're terrible.
We eat donut fries next.
Yes! Yes!
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Pat and Stu for Glenn today, and being joined by Jeffy now.
Thank you.
We heard about a new product that must be tried scientifically. It's just for science. We don't want to. It's just that we do this for you and for science.
Yeah, we have to.
They are donut fries from Dunkin' Donuts. I understand these are keto compatible, both pre and probiotic, with all kinds of antioxidant power.
Oh, well,
am I
if
right?
You say those things, on then that, they're yeah. gotta be good.
And then they're
good for you. Five in a pack.
Yeah, you get five in a pack.
I got ripped off.
They are donut sticks. I would say they're not. They're really like thick fries.
My guess is these are just donuts in the shape of a French fry, and so they're donut fries, right?
I mean, I think that's what they're going for here.
Yeah,
almost churro.
You could say churro. I see on the outside, if you see like salt would be on a fry, you see, I guess, a sugar or a cinnamon sugar type of vibe on the outside of it. They are, you know, about the size of your finger.
Mm-hmm.
And they smell pretty freaking good. I mean, donuts are good. That's the thing. You start with something like donuts.
And they're good for you.
Absolutely, they're good for you.
Am I right?
I heard somewhere that they're prebiotic, probiotic.
That's what I heard. Keto compatible.
I heard that too. Now, it doesn't say that here.
All organic.
It says here the five sticks are 240 calories.
For the five,
it's not bad. Yeah, 5 grams of sugar, 14 grams of total fat.
That's perfect.
That's not bad.
This is basically, you're right, kale or quinoa. It's like
you.
Eating one of those.
Very similar
Thank
to quinoa.
You
know?
Yeah.
All right, let's give it a shot here. Dunkin' Donuts donut fries.
Oh.
Mm. It's a donut in the shape of a fry.
It needs syrup, though.
Mm.
It's almost like the French toast sticks.
It's a sugar donut.
Yeah, this is...
In the shape of a fry.
If they were hot,
these came 2 hours ago, so they're not.
They're not hot, so getting them at the store would improve this experience. However, I will say, a donut
underwhelming.
needs a thicker base because... That's where the fluffiness lives.
Yeah.
And because these are thin, you're getting just like crunchy exterior of donut.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, I mean, it's not, oh yeah.
And because they're cold, it loses a lot. So I'm going to say.
I'll eat the rest of yours.
Shocking.
Yeah, that is a stunning surprise.
Man, I
didn't say I wasn't going to eat them. I'm just saying they're not spectacular.
I was supposed to have five. I only got four.
You can have the rest of those.
These are... very underwhelming to me.
Yeah, they're not worth the calorie intake.
No. Now, if you went to the store, you got them right out of whatever.
Hot, fresh.
Okay, maybe there's something there. They're okay. But this is not a good delivery system for fries. Now, I will say this. At the Texas Rangers ballpark here in Arlington, Texas, there is a stand right behind home plate, which has funnel cake fries. Funnel cake fries are utterly amazing. I love them.
But a lot of that stuff is like these as well. They got to be hot.
They got to be hot. You got to get them fat. And also, I would say this. You got with something like this, got to have dipping sauce.
Yes!
You got to have it. Where's a raspberry dipping sauce
Oh
here?
My gosh. Cream with a raspberry dipping sauce? Are you kidding me? They'd be delicious. Yes! That's what's missing here.
Yes.
The heat and a dipping sauce. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give these an 8.
No, this is, and by the way, on a scale 7. Of 1 to 18, because
Jeffy can only count to 18. So that's where that came from. So, in the Pat and Stu era.
I would say this, what I have here, is the now empty bag of Jeffy's donut fries.
I only had 4 of them. It was not even 5.
As we were talking, he ate the whole bag. So we do appreciate it.
I was hungry. I was waiting for them.
So... It's not entirely true that you're a marathon eater rather than a sprint eater. You really kind of both. You sprint and marathon. You sprint and just keep eating.
Short distances, though, I sprint.
That's a surprise. I would have guessed another outcome.
Shocking.
So is there anything, potential added value other than the donut fries that you're bringing to the table today?
Me?
Yeah.
Are you talking to me? Well, congratulations are in order to Angela Ponce. She's going to be the first transgender woman to compete in the Miss Universe.
I actually like this story because of the twist in it. There's a little bit of a twist.
Well, with our president?
Yes.
Yes, that's kind of cute. But she's
you could have built that up a little bit. You didn't have to just ruin the surprise.
Well, I didn't know.
The person responsible for her being...
That was six years ago.
Do you mean the part where they see dead people?
Yes.
Is that what you mean?
You mean the part where he's dead the whole movie and you'll like find out at the very, very end that he's been dead the whole time? You thought he was alive? Did I ruin that for anybody?
You mean the part where Darth Vader is his father?
Yeah, that's
the
part.
But he wasn't the president then.
No, it doesn't matter that he was the president then. What matters is all they do is scream and yell about how evil he is. If you're in GLAD or any of these organizations, they hate his guts. When in fact, he's the most gay-friendly president to ever be elected. There's no question. There's no doubt. It's hands down. And he is the one who changed the rule and sided with GLAD when this person sued.
Well, he actually claims that he did that before. That was a bit of the fight, that they had decided before the lawsuit.
That they were going to accept transgender people.
They were already
going
to do it, right, because the girl that was going to, that filed the lawsuit was with Gloria Allred, who Trump hates.
Yeah.
And there's a tweet that he tweeted later saying, calling her a third-rate lawyer and asking, is Gloria a man or a woman? Yeah, few men would know the answer to that one.
Oh, jeez. Was that in 2012 or 13?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah,
he was a little more aggressive. People think he's aggressive on Twitter now.
Wow.
They were not following him in 2012.
Yeah. And he even said, we made the decision 2 days before we even heard that Allred was involved. Had I known she was involved, yeah, maybe I wouldn't have made the decision. She's so easy to beat.
So Spain's Angela Ponce is now the first ever transgendered person to compete in the Miss Universe pageant coming up.
Yeah, you know, good. Good for her. She beat out all the other contestants, and she's on her way.
In Spain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's headed to the contest.
It would be interesting if Miss Universe is awarded to a person who was born a man. Wouldn't that be fascinating? It just shows how far we've come.
Intriguing commentary. Plus, I think, too, there's so many people that are just trying to... They live their lives to try to do something that would make Donald Trump mad.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I would not be surprised if just because they think they can say his old pageant is now won by a man who is actually a woman now would be a wonderful statement of tolerance in the society in which now, you know, because it's all hate. And, you know, the incivility is out of control, Pat.
It is
the incivility of the right, the incivility
of Donald Trump.
It's out of control
because of Donald Trump.
Thank
exactly.
You.
I know
Thank
that.
You.
Only Donald Trump's civility could cause someone to want to murder Ajit Pai, his FCC director,
right.
About net neutrality.
And only Donald Trump's incivility could cause for somebody to threaten to chop up Rand Paul and his family
right.
with an axe.
Wait, what?
Thank you. Thank you.
Rand
Paul's had a tough year.
Oh, my gosh.
Had a tough year. He was at the ballpark. Right. Then the neighbor attacked him. And then he's had this guy
right.
threatening him.
Right.
I mean, that's all of this last year.
He's had some close calls.
I know.
Was he at the baseball game?
Yeah. He was at the shooting of the baseball.
I don't remember for sure. Was he?
Yeah.
You're positive?
Yes.
All right. I mean, I've got no confidence in your certitude.
You have your computer right in front of you. Look it up.
Zero confidence in Jeffy's certitude.
Whatever. I will say this. This is something I had discovered about Jeffy many, many years ago.
Just go with
it. Is that his confidence level in between something like, you know, what is your wife's name or your son's name? His confidence level in that fact and his confidence level in something he has absolutely no idea about. He presents them the exact same way.
And you're like...
Oh, okay.
Well,
so really, that's the basic of quantum physics?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
You're positive of that?
Oh, yeah. Fact.
And then you read it, and you're like, wait a minute, that's not it at all.
It was completely wrong.
He was completely wrong.
Huh.
He just walks through the door.
I'm pretty sure that was right.
Like, Jeffy's like the ultimate wedding crasher. Like, he could just walk into a wedding, and he's just going to look like the family, and people are going to be talking to him asking him things. You're like, absolutely.
That has to be a big family if he looks like it. I mean, that's one gigantic family. Really?
I didn't mean
is there such a family on this planet? I don't. I mean, outside of the animal kingdom, is there? Is there such a family? That's all I'm asking. You're welcome.
By the way,
the answer to that is yes.
Yeah. Okay.
We should point out chewing the fat with Jeffy happens every day on the Pat Gray Unleashed program.
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm.
It's a good time to remind you of that, and you can listen to the podcast or watch it on theblaze.com/TV.
Thank you for that reminder. Mm-hmm. Appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes things like this seem to happen as I watch.
Yes.
Every day.
It does happen from time to time.
Once in a while.
You know, yesterday we talked about, I know you talked about the trash pile.
The garbage patch.
That was a revelation.
Yeah.
That started with, you know, the bullying of whales. That's a common thing that I'm taking on now.
There was a pilot whale that was bullied into eating 80
plastic bags.
And it killed him.
And it killed him. Now, so, I don't know how many plastic bags pilot whales can eat and live, but 80's too many.
80's one, at least one too many.
Yes.
So is this Donald Trump's fault too? Did Donald Trump bully him into
yes.
eating?
I don't know if it was Donald Trump or not, but somebody bullied this pilot
incivility
whale.
Incivility of the Trump administration has affected this entire planet and every living thing on it. Every living thing. And that's why we can attribute his incivility to this death of a pilot whale.
Well, I will say there's one thing that both Pat and I unite on is we are against bullying. We want to make sure
that goes without saying. I don't know why you'd even say something like that. Why
I just want to make sure people understand.
We're just reinforcing because we never bully anyone.
Yeah, no.
Never.
We wouldn't.
Why are you looking at me?
We might say the truth about certain people.
Oh, sure. Well, the truth has to be stated.
You know, but that's just us being honest and forthright.
It's like if Jeffy comes in and asks, does my fat make me look fat? Of course, we're going to say, yes, it does. We wouldn't lie to him about that.
He doesn't ask that all that often, but we do answer it.
But we do answer it.
Quite a bit.
Truthfully.
Just in case.
Well, thank you.
Just in case he were to.
Oh, you look like you're going
to
ask a question. Yes. now I know what the yes means. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
So what's your rating, 1 to 18 on the donut fries?
You know... What did you give it?
I think I give it more like a 6.
That was almost an 8, right?
I was a 7, yeah. I think I landed at 7.
I don't know. Maybe if it had some milk or something with it, it might be.
Oh, jeez. Oh, good gosh.
Might be better. I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
You know, sometimes I think I miss the Pat and Stu show, and then I remember Jeffy doing this.
And I remember
the milk.
This happening so often.
The milk thing. For whatever reason, he must bother us with the milk thing. I'm a fat glass of milk.
It would be good with it.
Is there anything that could make it better? Yeah, maybe make some milk. Okay. All right.
Well, thank you for this, Jeff.
You're welcome.
Yes,
no problem.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We're really happy to have you here. And yes, your fat makes you look fat.
But I didn't. I didn't ask.
Pat and Stu for Glenn. On the Glenn Beck Program.
We live in a divided country, Pat.
No.
Very divided.
Really?
In fact, a divided globe. Did you know that?
No.
Divided globe. They did BBC did a poll of a bunch of countries and asked, do you think your country is divided?
Okay.
Okay. What do you think the U.S. percentage was? People who think that we're divided. Expected to be very high, right?
Yeah.
And it is 84%. 84% say the U.S.,
that's extremely
the country is
high.
Divided. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not number one on the list. But one thing I would say is pretty amazing is 2 points ahead of South Africa. You look at the example of a divided country, you'd think of South Africa. Only 82% of people in South Africa say their country is divided. However, not the highest.
Where did we place? Can you say?
Let's see. I think there's 19 total. We were 6th of the listed countries. Actually tied with a few others. Poland, 84%. Spain, 84%. Brazil, 84%. I mean, every country. What I think is interesting about this is pretty much every country thinks they're divided.
Yeah.
There's only a couple of exceptions to this, and they're not places you'd necessarily want to live. Saudi Arabia, only 34% say they're divided.
Wow.
China, only 48% say they're divided. Those are the only two countries under 50. Japan, 52. Turkey, 65. India, 66. France, 75% say they're divided. Mexico, 78. Germany, 81. Russia, 81. South Africa, 82. Brazil, 84. Spain, 84. U.S., 84. Poland, 84. The U.K., 85. So they think they're even more divided. Italy, 92% say they're divided.
Wow. Italy? Yeah. What are they divided over?
I don't know. I mean, marinara versus Alfredo?
Maybe.
Could be. Argentina, 92% say they're divided.
Huh.
Number one wasn't stunning to me. 93% of people in Serbia.
Okay.
Okay, I kind of think, they're pretty divided.
Yeah, that makes some
sense. They're pretty divided.
And do they even know what they're fighting about? Because Americans sort of don't.
No.
That Serbian thing was strange because I don't think a lot of Americans knew what the issues were or whose side we should be on. Who was the good guy? Who was not? Because if you remember, it was Christians against Muslims there. That's not how it was presented, but that's essentially what was at the root of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on the side of the Muslims. right, against the Serbian Christians.
It's a bizarre one.
It's interesting, yeah. And we're never given credit for having helped Muslims in Serbia. Anybody ever said, "Hey, remember when the U.S. Helped Muslims? Remember they took the battle to the Christians in that particular war."
Mm.
It's amazing.
So, how much Civil War genocide talk coming up on Pat Gray Unleashed today?
100%.
Oh, really?
The whole show.
Yeah, wow.
Dedicated.
Oh, wow.
To a Serbian genocide.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. It's definitely one to tune in on July 3rd.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.